proceedings today. As I noted earlier, the three special masters will be taking turns at presiding over the proceedings over the general causation testimony. Let me start by noting that, as you see, Special Master Vowell is not with us at this time. She will join us later this morning. She's attending a funeral this morning, but she will be here later this morning. We'll certainly be here by the time we start the testimony of Dr. Mumper. Another matter that I'd like to take up is to basically repeat some comments that I made on Monday morning. And these are addressed to the family members of Jordan King and William Mead. Of course, Monday morning, when we started the proceedings, I made certain comments based on behalf of all three of the special masters to the family members. At that point, of course, William Mead's mother was here and some members of her support group, but Mrs. King was not here yet, Mr. George Mead and some of the other folks that have arrived since Monday morning weren't here. So I think I'll repeat those comments for their benefit. And basically they're this. First, we simply want to welcome you folks and thank you very much for coming all the way from the Portland area, most of you, to be here with us. We greatly appreciate it. Second, we wanted to say that while we haven't had the opportunity to meet Jordan or William, we certainly have met a number of other autistic children, and we have read very, very carefully the records of Jordan's case and William's case, and even from the cold medical records, we can get a sense, and as we did from George Mead's very poignant testimony yesterday, of what it's like to be raising an autistic child and the difficulties the family has come through. And we wanted to extend our sympathy to the family members, but also to go beyond that and say that it's also obvious from those records that, as it was from Mr. Mead's testimony yesterday, what an admirable job these families have done, along with so many other families of autistic children, in working hard to overcome those difficulties, to make the best of the situation, to work with those children, and to bring them along at the best way possible. And that certainly comes through very clear in the records of these two children, and we certainly state our admiration for the way the families have coped with this situation. And lastly is that, of course, we want to thank you folks for not only being here, but for allowing your son's cases to be included as test cases in the omnibus autism proceeding. These are very, very difficult issues that we have to wrestle with. We need to do that in the context of individual cases, and we greatly appreciate your allowing your cases to be included here as test cases. So I just want to again thank all of you folks very, very much for being here and being a part of this proceeding. I also, in regard to that same note, I'll just again explain for the benefit of both people listening at home and people here, emphasize what we're doing here, the difference between general causation and specific causation, and relating to what special masters we have here, that again, we have individual cases is what the program is designed to, the Vaccine Act is designed to resolve. We have to decide individual cases. Is Jordan King's symptoms caused by vaccines? Are William Mead's symptoms caused by vaccines? And each of the other children involved. We have to resolve individual cases. But because of, after discussion with counsel for both sides, all agreed that some kind of proceedings that we rather than hear all these many expert witnesses 5,000 different times, it makes better sense to group the witnesses, take them at one time, and get as much as out of we can from those witnesses, the expert witnesses, and then apply it to individual cases. So this is a combination proceeding. When we're taking the general causation testimony, such as Dr. Deeth, Dr. Apogian, all the witnesses we've heard so far this week, all the expert witnesses for both sides, all three of us will be analyzing that testimony and applying it to individual cases. Then when it comes to resolving individual cases, though, it will be one special master for one case. And as I noted on Monday, the Jordan King case is assigned to me. The William Meade case is assigned to Special Master Campbell Smith. And a third case dropped out at the last minute that was assigned to Special Master Vowell. But a third case is being selected, and she will apply the general causation testimony taken during this hearing. She will apply that to a third case. So I emphasize that that's why you'll see different special masters presiding during the general causation testimony. But when it comes to the individual cases, you noted yesterday that during the testimony of George Meade about his son William, Special Master Campbell Smith, who is the special master assigned to that case, she presided over that. Just as when Mrs. King testifies this morning, I will preside over that since her son's case is assigned to me. And so I want to just emphasize for everyone's benefit that we're taking both general causation testimony and testimony that applies to individual cases. And that's why today, during Dr. Mumper's testimony, even if she talks specifically about the two different cases, we may switch in the middle of her testimony as to actually who's presiding, just to emphasize the fact that each of us, when it comes to deciding individual cases, each of us is deciding the case that's assigned to him or her. So with that, that's all the preliminaries that I have for this morning. Anything from either counsel that we could do on the record before we do Mrs. King's testimony?
Not from petitioner's special master, except that speaking on behalf of our clients, we appreciate the comments you made earlier today and on Monday.
Thank you.
I'm nothing from the government.
All right. Do you want to call Ms. King at this point?
Yes, Special Master. Petitioners are ready to call my Linda King.
Please take the stand, Ms. King. Please have a seat, ma'am. And if you could raise your right hand for me, please. Do you solemnly swear that the testimony you're about to give us will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help you, God?
I do.
Okay, thank you, Ms. King. And let me again say thank you for being here. And I know that this kind of testimony will not be an easy thing. You take your time and get a drink. If you need a delay, let us know. But we'll hope to get through this with as little emotional pain to you as possible. But we do thank you here for being here and being with us. Mr. Powers, go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, Mrs. King.
Good morning.
As you know, we need to make a nice, clean record, so I'd like you to spell your name so the court reporter can get it onto the record.
It's M-Y, capital L-I-N-D-A, all one word. Last name King, K-I-N-G.
Ms. King, where do you live?
Portland, Oregon.
Who do you live with?
My husband and my two children, Jordan and Maya.
And what's your husband's name?
Frederick.
Does he go by Fred?
He does.
So anywhere where we see Fred King in the medical records or in the charts, that's referring to your husband?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Is Maya younger or older than Jordan?
Maya is 15 months younger than Jordan.
What do you do for a living?
I'm primarily a stay-at-home mom, and I also teach music in the public schools and a little bit privately.
What sort of music do you teach?
I happen to fall into African-style marimba. My husband and I met playing in an African marimba band, and that's how I got to learn that music. So that's what I teach in the Portland Public Schools. African marimba.
What sort of work does your husband Fred do?
He is an auditor for Metro, Metro Regional Services, which is a government agency in Portland.
Now, we're going to focus, obviously, on Jordan's life and, unfortunately, a lot of his medical history. But before even delving into the strictly medical issues, I would like you to describe for the special masters Jordan's birth and very early childhood. And if you can confine it to really the first couple of months of life, from when he was born to the first couple of months of progress, if you could explain that history to the special masters here.
Well, Jordan was born full term. I think he was 1 or 2 days ahead of the due date. Born healthy, we felt very lucky. Happy to have such a wonderful little boy. And
let me just interrupt you. In terms of his birth, you said he was healthy. Were there any difficulties or complications with the labor or birth from either his end or your end?
He was born with the assist of a vacuum. I forget what they call it, but I had a little trouble at the last stage, and they helped me with a vacuum suction. Okay. And I think he scored 8 on an APGAR. I had a low grade fever. They gave me some antibiotics. Nobody seemed concerned about it. They said that was a common thing. And actually, it was a long birth. I think it was 22 hours, but it seemed to go pretty well.
And then in terms of your pregnancy leading up to then, is it a pregnancy you would describe as uneventful?
Yes. I got a little queasy in the third month, and it passed very quickly. I don't remember having huge problems with swelling and all these pregnancy complaints. I was still very active. I think I got sick around the fourth month of pregnancy. It might have been food poisoning. I was vomiting for a couple of days, and it just got better. Other than that, all of my visits to the doctor, you know, everything, it was going fine. She never gave me any comments to lead me otherwise. We had 1 or maybe 2 ultrasounds done. Everything looked fine.
And during your pregnancy, did you smoke cigarettes or drink alcohol?
Oh, no. I bought prenatal vitamins, the expensive kind, and I've never smoked, and I definitely avoided all of those things that pregnant mothers are supposed to avoid.
Do you have any dental amalgams, or more specifically, at the time that you were carrying Jordan to term, did you have any dental amalgams?
I've only got 1 or 2.
So, I interrupted you and went back in time. Now I want to go back forward to where you were describing after Jordan was born. If you could pick up your description again for the special masters, his general health and well-being after he was born.
Well, for the first 2 months?
For the first couple of months, let's say, yeah.
Pretty uneventful. We were noticing how alert he was, seemed to have eye contact very early on. We took him to Florida, which is where I'm from, and almost all of my family is there. We took him for Christmas, so he would have been about 3 months old, and everybody was just giving me all sorts of compliments about what an alert, sparkly little guy he was. I remember that while we were in Florida, he was raising his head up, and everybody was saying, oh, that's really great, he's a strong boy. And he actually did roll over once in Florida on my father's bed, because he lifted his head and he just sort of rolled all the way over, and everybody told me, oh, how great that was. Nothing really to speak of other than just a happy little boy.
In those first couple of months, you had a well baby visit, and he received immunizations at that point, as best you would recollect. Correct?
I think at a 2 month visit, he got whatever round of shots were back then the norm.
And then, you know, both the respondents' lawyers and the court here have the medical records, but it's your recollection that he received the full round of recommended pediatric vaccines?
Yes.
He received them on schedule?
Yes.
Was there ever a time that he went into the doctor's office for immunizations where any doctor said, skip a shot or don't get a shot at this point?
I don't believe so.
Now, moving ahead after the first couple of months, go ahead and let's just describe Jordan's progress.
Well, he seemed to be physically very, very strong. We noticed that he could pull himself up before he could crawl. I think he crawled at around 7 months, but before that he did a lot of creeping, which I now understand they call scooting. Was able to get around quite well with this scooting. One thing that really stands out is how much he laughed. He just had a great belly laugh and seemed to really enjoy physical humor and silliness, and smiled reciprocally, babbled. We had, I think we had this parrot that when you turn it on, it repeats back to you whatever you say only three times in a row and slightly higher pitch, and he seemed to think that that was quite a lot of fun to have conversations with in his little baby babbling way. He was very imitative, and we noticed pretty early on that he liked to draw with a magnadoodle, which is a children's toy that is kind of like an Etch-a-Sketch only with a pen. And he started to spend a lot of time drawing. He liked to look at books, and one of our really fun things that we would do is I would lay sitting up in a bed and put him in my lap, and he would hold the book, and I would read it to him, and then I would say, turn the page, and he would actually, it was a board book, and he would turn the page, and then I would read, and that was one thing that I remember with doing with him a lot.
And do you recall about how old he was when he was turning pages of books?
It was pretty early. I would say somewhere 6-7 months he was able to do that.
You also described the magnadoodle, and it has a pen. I mean, the right. Etch-a-Sketch, having children myself, you can tell the difference in the toys. The Etch-a-Sketch has the knobs,
right.
And the magnadoodle has a magnetic pen. Right. Did he sort of grab it with his fist, or did he hold it like a pen? How did he work that?
Well, very early on, he just grabbed it in his fist, and he very early on learned how much fun he could have. He quickly evolved to the proper grip. We would sort of correct him, and what we did is we had an easel, and we attached the magnadoodle to the easel so that he could be standing up, and then he would hold the pen with the proper grip and do a lot of drawing. This would be, you know, between 6 months up to, you know, and well, until the regression, he was spending a lot of time drawing really nice little figures, look like little people, and playing with shapes and just doing the typical little exploring with the drawing. He also, we got him toys like a tool bench with all these little plastic hammers and screwdrivers, and we also got him a toy kitchen, which was quite large and had a little stove and a refrigerator. And he seemed to really like to play with those two things, with his little drill and his hammer, and it had little screws that you could knock into holes and things like that.
Let me ask you about that. What you're saying, when he played with them, he actually used the tools as one would use tools.
Right. My husband works with tools a lot, and he builds marimbas. And so Jordan would watch Fred doing those kinds of things with his tools, and actually Jordan sometimes would even help Fred with the marimbas when it was time to put the cotter pins in the hole. Fred would even let him sort of play with the real hammer, and he definitely was very imitative of anything that we showed him how to do. Another thing Jordan liked to do was to dance to music, which is something that is just now slowly emerging back, but we have these ridiculously funny videos of him doing silly dances to music and sort of cooing along with the music and taking great delight in that.
And this is all in that roughly 6 month period, 6 months and moving forward?
Yes.
So let's go ahead, and I know I've interrupted a couple of times to clarify issues, but if you could go ahead and start talking again about his progress from 6 months up to, say, that first year birthday, and what you can recall now about his development.
Well, I remember that we took him to San Diego. My husband had a business trip, and we went to San Diego. And I remember taking him to the San Diego Zoo and how much fun we had doing that. He got to meet his uncle, and we were at his uncle's apartment, and I remember him being very playful and happy then. For some reason, trips stand out in my mind more. When he was 8 months old, we went to New York to visit Fred's relatives, and Fred has a quite a large family, and so there were lots of relatives, and we took more video then than we would normally because it was a special trip, and I see how much Jordan enjoyed just reveling in the attention of his cousins, particularly the younger ones, just falling into people's laps and snuggling and just enjoying people so much. And then when he was, I think, a year old, I took him by myself to Florida, and again, the same thing, meeting all of my relatives are there, and meeting all the family, and playing with his cousins, wrestling on the floor with them, being silly, just really enjoying the attention of people and everybody remarking what a sparkly little guy he was.
At these family functions, were there cousins around who were roughly his age and older?
He was at that time the youngest cousin, and the age of the next cousin older than him, I think, was about 8 years old. So those were the cousins that he played with. They just adored him, took him everywhere.
So you've got us up to about 8 months. Let's, if you can, move things forward a little bit in time, if you could.
Well, he started walking around 9.5 months, and once he was able to just take those first few bobbly steps and fall down, the progress went very fast, and by 10 months, I would say he was walking very well, and by 11 months, he was going up and down our stairs, although I wasn't crazy about that, but he could do it. So now he's up on his feet and getting into all sorts of mischief. I think his first words didn't come until he was about a year old, and of course it was mama, that was the first word. The other word that he really liked was hot, because we would be in the kitchen and he would be watching me cook, and one day I lifted up a lid of a pot, and a bunch of steam came out, and I looked at him and I went, hot. So whenever he said that word, he always said it, hot, because he thought that was how you were supposed to say that word. Daddy came later. I don't remember exactly when, but it was always daddy, like that. He loved to say shoes, because for him, when he would want to go outside, which was really all the time, he was very much an outside boy, he would go and get his shoes and then come up to you and say shoes, and that just meant take me outside. He could say bubbles, because he loved to be blown bubbles. And then he liked this one TV show called Blue's Clues a lot. And he started saying mailbox for mailbox, because that's a character on the show. And tickety was the clock. And he would always say tickety like that. It was very cute. So we were happy with his progress in the physical sense and in the language area.
And let me ask, even aside from specific words that he had, was he able, at this point, a year of age, was he able to communicate his wants to you, even if he didn't have a specific word that he could articulate? Could he communicate his needs and his wants?
Oh, yes. I never remembered that being a problem.
And how would he do that? Can you remember specific things that, if he wanted something, how he might go about communicating that to you?
Well, if he wanted to go outside, he would bring me his shoes or my keys. Once we caught him trying to, you know, put the keys in the doorknob and let himself out, he would point. He would bring you, if there was something that he couldn't open, he would bring it to you to open it. He just got everything that he wanted.
Now, moving forward from that first year, again, describe some of the specific progress that you can remember, particularly in these areas that you've been describing, his behaviors, his interaction with other people and his communication?
He started going to play parks very early on and doing a lot of play with other children. He eventually got a playmate in the area that lived just two doors down. They had the same birthday, and we did a lot of outings with them. I just remember, really, it was just unremarkable. Everything seemed perfect and fine at that time. By that time, I'm pregnant with my second child.
And the playmate that he developed at that point, in thinking back, was he developmentally at about the same place she was? In other words, if you were comparing him to his peers, how did he seem to be developmentally at that point?
Just very little difference. He was a little bit more physically along, I think, but they were pretty comparable, I would say.
Okay. So go ahead then. He's continuing into this second year of life, going to about, it sounds like, the 14th or 15th month.
Well, at his 15th month, his sister was born, and I remember him, when he was shown his sister for the first time, his father said, "Give her a kiss," and he reached down and gave her a little kiss, and she was brought home the next day, and he was very curious about her, but mostly just ignored her unless she made a squawk or something, because, you know, she was just just lying in the bassinet mainly. I don't remember him being as bothered by her as he became later. These were just happy times, you know. We got a double stroller, and we would take them everywhere in this little double stroller. Doing lots of outings, nothing really at that point is causing any concern for me as far as how he's doing.
Now, there is a medical record indicating that when he was about 15 months old, there was an emergency room visit involving a fever. Do you recall that?
I do.
Can you describe to the special masters what the circumstances were that led you all to take Jordan to the doctor?
Well, he had a fever, and the fever was had lasted a few days, and we had called an advice nurse, and they said to try to keep him hydrated and give him children's Tylenol and rotate children's Tylenol and children's Advil. And I believe he was also vomiting. And at some point, after a few days, he wasn't wetting his diapers anymore. And I think that's what prompted us to take him to the emergency room, because he didn't seem that interested in drinking. And so we took him to the emergency room, and they just basically said, "Keep doing what you're doing," and they sent us home, and within a couple of days, he just recovered.
So he was never sent to the hospital or admitted to the hospital for following this ER visit?
No, they sent, I think we went in the middle of the night, and they just sent us home after they checked him out. We later found out that they were going to prescribe something for his vomiting, but we didn't even know that we were supposed to get it, and we went home without it.
And in your recollection, all of those symptoms resolved within a couple of days?
Yeah, he was fine after that.
There was no additional medical care following from that emergency room visit that you recall?
No.
Now, that was at about 15 months. How did he progress after 15 months?
Everything seemed fine for the next few months. You know, by now his sister is becoming more of a presence, and one thing he liked to do that we weren't crazy about is share his pacifier with her, take it out of his mouth and stick it in hers. It was by then springtime, and we're back out being outside playing with his little buddy up the street. Nothing really concerning.
At what point did, I mean, obviously something concerning and ultimately very concerning happened. That's why we're here. How did that start to dawn on you that, that something was of concern? What was it and when did it happen?
Well, retrospectively, we realized that the toe walking was probably the first sign.
And when did that begin?
About 18, 19 months. Now, when we saw that, we thought it was cute. We thought it was another one of his little dances. And it wasn't all the time that he toe-walked. Sometimes he'd be flat-footed, and sometimes he would be on his toes. That gradually became his main mode of walking around. So I would have to say that was the first sign. He started getting diarrhea that never stopped. And I know that sometimes it was explosive diarrhea, because one time I had him on the floor and I was changing his diaper and I didn't have my wipes and I just went around the corner to get them, and when I came back, there was about an 8-foot trail on the linoleum floor of you know what, and I thought, wow, that doesn't look right. So the diarrhea was definitely, I would say, another early sign.
Was this at about that same 18-month time frame?
Yes.
Okay. What, around this time, were there any other things that you either noticed then or even looking backwards now that you would identify as things that are concerning?
I would say hand flapping started to become a concern, because it started very gradually. He would go down a slide and just get a little bit of a physical rush, and then he would walk away doing this. And
so that the court reporter can catch that, and I'm not doing this, I'm not making light, but that you were flapping your hands.
Yes.
And that's what Jordan would do when he came down the slide?
After he would come down and stand up, he would do this. We thought it was a form of expressing excitement. And like the toe walking, that started to become more and more obvious. He would hand flap for reasons that we couldn't see. He would just walk around on his toes flapping his hands. So that was another odd thing that we just kind of, you know, we weren't really that informed about autism, mm-hmm. So we weren't even thinking autism when we saw that.
Right.
We just thought that was one of his little quirks.
So it takes the retrospective perception for you to sort of recognize around 18, 19 months this
right.
is going on.
It was definitely retrospective.
Okay.
We had to go back and look at those videos. You know, when he got the diagnosis, what we did is we looked at all the symptoms of autism and then went and it was very disheartening to see that list of all those things that your child had done.
And the first time that anything on that list emerged, as best you can recollect, was this 18 to 19-month range.
Yeah, I would say in the spring of that year.
Okay. So go ahead. At any other, around the same period of time, any other emerging signals that something might not be right?
Well, his eyes started to look very sad. I was concerned about that. I noticed that we took a lot of photographs, and you know, they say the eyes are the window of the soul, and every picture I took of him, he either looked sad or confused, and I was concerned about that, because before that he had had just this bright, just go get him look on his face. And we actually had some relatives visit around that time, my aunt and uncle, and I remember my aunt, she's a therapist of some kind, and she said, oh, he's just sad. He's mourning the loss of having your full-time attention, because by now his baby sister is getting to be more vocal and getting around the house more, those sort of things. And she just said, oh, just make sure you spend a lot of special time with Jordan, because he's just missing having all of your attention. And they had a very brief visit just for a couple of days. They were in town for a convention, and they left. So, again, you know, it was probably an early sign, but it just got explained away. I think that by that summer, I definitely was feeling like there was something wrong with Jordan. I thought it might be emotional. He would sit in his sandbox. Normally, before that, he would go in his sandbox and dig and do all the shovel and pail things. And I remember getting out my video camera and starting to videotape him, and I put it down because he was just sitting there, just very forlornly, not even looking at me, with sand in his hands, just letting it dribble out of his hands over and over. And it was just a very sad picture to me. He then, around the same time, started humming a lot, and that became incessant. I mean, I'm talking humming for, you know, almost every waking minute, this humming. And then what crept in is this sort of donkey bray sound. And then I noticed he wasn't saying some of the words that he would say. And just all of those things became more and more problematic for us.
And this is in the summer of, it would have been 1999. So he's 18, 19, 20 months old. Is that the correct time frame?
Yes, yes. I would say, you know, late spring into summer, all of his skills were starting to disappear. I also noticed that his handhold on his magnadoodle pen had gone back to the baby grip. I don't know what it's called.
So he lost the pencil grip.
He lost his pencil grip. Occasionally I could correct him and he would hold it that way for a while, but it seemed like his preferred way to pick up and start on his own was the baby grip, and I could still correct it, you know. But it bothered me that it wasn't his choice to hold the pen that way. The humming and the donkey sounds were definitely a very concerning thing because it seemed to replace his words.
That I was just going to ask you that. It sounds as if these new sounds are emerging and words are disappearing.
Yes.
And
for a long time, maybe a few weeks, I hadn't heard any words at all. And I was really just, you know, I wouldn't say starting to panic, but wondering, you know, why is he so sad that he's not even talking to me anymore? And I remember putting him on a changing table, and in his room we had a wallpaper border with the letters of the alphabet with some, you know, animal or object for each letter. And one of his favorite things to do is I would point to the C and the D because they were right there by the changing table, and I would say, "Jordan, what does the kitty say?" And he would say, "Meow." And then I would point to the D, "What does the doggy say?" And he would go, "Roof, roof," like that. And he had stopped doing that and all of his words, and after a couple of weeks of hearing nothing coming out of him word-wise, I pointed to the kitty, and in a very just quiet tone, he just went, "Meow," like that. And I just thought, oh, good, okay, he's okay. He's going to be okay, but that wasn't actually the case. I think that was almost his last gasp as far as words, if you count meow as a word.
How was he with playing with toys at that point? Because you had mentioned very specific toy play that he was doing between 6 months and 12 months.
Well, his tool bench, that was one of his favorite places to play, he started taking the hammer or the screwdriver and holding it in front of his eyes and just turning it over. Like he just wanted to study it from all perspectives. And he would do that with the little red hammer and the little yellow screwdriver, just sort of studying it. On the magnadoodle, what I noticed is that he would draw the same thing over and over and over. He would draw it, he would erase it, he would draw it, he would erase it. And I thought that was kind of weird. He would draw a circle, he would draw a line down the circle, and then he would cross the line three times, and then he would erase it. And I don't know what that was that he was drawing. I think I might have shown him that once, and that was his drawing mantra for a long time.
Coming out of this 18, 19, 20-month period, we're noticing all of these concerns and problems you've identified. What happened after that?
Well, at some point, I really thought there was something wrong with him. The humming was literally driving us crazy because it never stopped. Sometimes it would turn into this sort of growling sound. Uh, I My husband's sister came and visited us that summer with her two twin daughters, and she actually has eight children. And she said to us, "What's wrong with your kid?" And that was just more, you know, outside advice I was getting, that maybe there was something wrong with him. And I respected her advice because she had had eight children. You know, why doesn't he look at you? That sort of thing. You know, he just stopped looking at us. He got these sort of stares. He'd be in his high chair like this, just staring. And I would walk in front of him and he wouldn't even blink. Or it was as if he just looked through you. And he didn't want to be held on my lap anymore. We'd pick him up to put him on our laps and he would straighten his body so he could just not be set down. He didn't want to be touched. He basically withdrew. And when my husband's sister came and visited and said, "You know, what's wrong with your kid?" I thought, okay, it's not just me.
What happened after that?
Around the time of his second birthday, I called our doctor and made an appointment because I just thought there was something wrong with him. And that's really where it all unraveled for us, because she asked me a series of questions. She did notice he wasn't talking. She did notice that he wasn't having eye contact. She did notice the humming. He hummed all through the visit. And she said he's possibly autistic.
What did she recommend that you do, if anything, about that possibility?
She said that the best hope for you is behavioral intervention. She wasn't sure that he was autistic. I remember her saying to me, "Well, this is a big diagnosis, so let's just wait and see. We'll refer you to, specialists." But I think she was just saying, "Don't panic, you know, don't fall apart. He's possibly autistic, and we'll do the proper testing." And that visit was really the beginning of it for us.
This was around 2 years old?
I think it was in October of 99, so he had just turned two. After having had a birthday party where he did not enjoy the pinata or the company, basically stayed by himself for his whole birthday party and didn't have any fun at all, didn't participate in any of the games with the other kids. So
after this discussion with your pediatrician, what did you do in terms of getting care, attention, evaluation, anything like that following on?
I think that she told us that we needed to go to the Neurodevelopmental Center for Children and get looked at by a Dr. Budden. And this is all kind of a blur for me at this point, but I just remember having to wait for appointments and being very anxious. I guess there's all kinds of waiting lists for these kinds of things.
And again, let me interrupt for just a second. I mentioned this to Mr. Mead yesterday. The specifics of doctor visits and medical visits, the special masters do have those records. The respondent has those records. So what we're looking for here, even if things are a blur as you describe it, is just your best personal recollection.
I remember sort of this waiting period in the last few months of 99. We might have taken him to an audiologist. I don't remember. What I do remember is that by January of 2000, we are seeing people all the time, going here, going there. Of course, we got on the internet. We're trying to figure out what autism even is. The first thing that they like to do is to rule out deafness. And we were pretty sure that he wasn't deaf, but we went ahead and did the test. We knew he wasn't deaf because by that time he couldn't stand the sound of noises, his sister's cries. We couldn't take him to restaurants or anywhere like a mall where there was a lot of chaotic type noise. He would cover his ears. So we knew he wasn't deaf, but we ruled that out. At some point, he got a diagnosis from a few different places. One was, I think, at the Providence Neurological Center for Children. My husband took him to Legacy Emmanuel Hospital, got another official diagnosis, and then we were told, well, you're eligible for services now through the Portland Public Schools Early Intervention Program. They came and did their own three-day visit to do their own diagnosis to see what services he was eligible for. So we had all these people looking at him and telling us he was autistic.
And universally, these different evaluations all came to the same conclusion, essentially, that he did have autism.
Yes.
After getting that diagnosis, were you given any directions in terms of care or treatment or therapy for Jordan to address the autism diagnosis?
We, through our pediatrician, we were told that the best hope was through behavioral intervention, and that's why she had mentioned the early intervention program. We got that set up just as quickly as we could. We got him, the first thing they did was put him in a toddler group, which means taking your kid who can't stand being around other people and putting them in a portable classroom with dozens of other kids with a similar idea about wanting to be alone and trying to force them to play with each other and walking on balance beams, doing things like that. He failed toddler group. So they put him in, I think it was called a classroom where he got more one-on-one help. These were the behavioral things that we did, and it was through the school system, having a speech therapist and OT, those kinds of things.
And this was all starting in early 2000?
I think so, yes.
At that point, he would have been almost 2.5 years old, getting close to that end.
Getting close to that.
Okay.
I had a lot of friends that were healthcare people, so I was asking them a lot of questions, and one of my friends was a naturopathic doctor. So I think I took Jordan to her in January of that year, because along with all these regressing behavioral things, he had diarrhea for a year. And that diarrhea seemed to come on, and projectile vomiting too. He would just throw up and then just walk on and keep doing what he was doing as if nothing had happened. No fever, you know, just projectile vomiting. It was not uncommon to just be walking around the house and find it somewhere that he had thrown up and you didn't even know. So I took Jordan to Dr. Jean, to see if there, you know, to help him not just with the autism but with the diarrhea and the vomiting. And she told us the first thing you need to do is to get him off of gluten and dairy. And so we did it. That day, I mean, I went home and cleaned out the kitchen, put all of, you know, our food in a special place, and I went all over town trying to find gluten and casein-free food. And Jordan did not like that at all. And that was a tough diet change for him. He got very sick in January as well. So there were visits for his vomiting and diarrhea. And Pamela Jean, Dr. Jean, did a workup on him, checking his intestinal flora or lack thereof, and dysbiosis, checking for dysbiosis, and checking for yeast, and trying to find out why he was having this chronic diarrhea. And we were also simultaneously still taking him to our pediatrician, Dr. Roberts. And I mentioned that we were putting Jordan on this diet, and she said, well, that's going to be too stressful for you. You don't need more stress right now. It's not a good thing to do. She was not supportive of it at all. But by February, we were getting eye contact back. So we were, and at that point, the only thing we had done was get him off of gluten and dairy.
Oh, And doing the some of the occupational therapy, speech therapy?
Well, that I don't even think had started yet.
Okay, that's what I wanted to get the sequence right. You started the diet first.
The diet was in January.
Okay, and then added OT, occupational therapy.
Well, the first thing he did now was to go to this toddler group.
Okay. It sounds like that didn't last particularly long.
We forced our way through it. I felt like he was miserable the whole time.
Okay.
And they tried to give him intelligence tests, and he couldn't even take them. And I didn't see the point of trying to give a child an intelligence test at that point.
Okay. So you start with the diet. Then there are some therapeutic interventions around behavior. What other things were you doing at about that time, again, sort of moving forward in time chronologically?
Well, I think in February we had heard about John Green, Dr. Green, through other parents of autistic children. We had been online. We pretty much begged our way in to his office. He was by invitation only, and another Dan doctor sort of put in a good word for us, and we started seeing John Green. And any test that Pamela Jean would do, we would have them sent to Dr. Green. At some point, we transferred over completely to Dr. Green as Jordan's doctor. And Dr. Green was also very much interested in the chronic diarrhea and did similar tests. He also did a heavy metals test. He said, I want to do a heavy metals test on this child. And I thought, oh no, it's lead. And we got those results back. And he said, I want to do this test again, only now I want to do a provoked test, which means that you give your child, I believe he was given Keymet, a provoking agent. And we ran the same test again. And when the test results were mailed simultaneously to the doctor and to us. And when we got those results back, we saw that he was in the 96th percentile for mercury. And that just, you know, even just visually on the page, seeing that line go all the way over to the far right of the page was very upsetting to me. And I thought, oh no, we're being exposed to something toxic. And that's what happened to Jordan. We went in and talked to Dr. Green about it. He explained to us chelation and what that involved, and that was a therapy that we started, I think, in March around then. I'm not really good on the dates, but...
Yeah, and again, those will be in the medical record, so right now it's just your best recollection. You mentioned a minute ago that when you saw the mercury results, you were concerned that there was some toxic exposure, was the term that you used. So you were concerned when you saw those results that there might be a toxic exposure that Jordan had encountered?
Oh, yes.
What did you do in response to that concern?
Well, Dr. Green told us to chelate, so we did that. We did things that, you know, were helpful to Jordan's body that would help his body to just naturally chelate. We had some nutritional supplements, some things to deal with his dysbiosis. At some point, even though we had learned about the thimerosal in the vaccines as being the, you know, a known exposure to mercury, at some point I just wanted to rule out that he wasn't getting it from somewhere else. And we ran a test on me because I thought, what if I had passed that to Jordan? So we ran a test on me, and that came up with nothing significant. And then we decided to do a vapor test on the house. So we researched some labs and found one out just outside of Portland and did this vapor test, and that came back with, you know, no detectable limits, so we ruled that out. We started researching the people who had owned the house before us. We thought, you know, what if they were doing something here that they weren't supposed to be doing, like a meth lab or anything that would leave toxins in the house. We talked to neighbors. Nothing seemed to pan out there. We did lead swipes to check our house for lead.
Is this an older house?
It is an older house. Before they sold it to us, they painted everything and left the cans of paint down in the basement. So we were down there looking to see what kind of paint they had used. We checked for a toxic mold. I think it's called Stachybotrys. We had been reading some articles in our newspaper about homes that had mold so bad that children were having developmental delays. So we found a lab that would do a test for that mold, and we checked our windowsills and places like that, and that came back negative. We even checked Jordan for Giardia, because I had read where even things like that can cause developmental delays. I think we had him checked for tuberculosis. I don't know why. I think because we had a homeless population that liked to gather across the street from our house, and I would hear a lot of coughing over there. And I, you know, we checked him for diabetes. We just wanted to rule out anything that we could.
And so it sounds as if ultimately you ruled out a whole list of things that you felt might be contributing to any toxic exposure.
Right. We just sat down and racked our brains. What have we done or what have we been around that could have caused his demise?
So the work that you're doing at this point to identify possible sources of an exposure, he's undergoing care with Dr. Green at the same time. Is that correct?
Yes.
What sort of things was Jordan doing with Dr. Green? And what's your understanding of what the goal of Dr. Green's care was at that early point?
Dr. Green's goal was to get the mercury out of his body and to get a handle on his dysbiosis.
And what was your understanding? You've used that term. What's your understanding, again, not as a medical expert, but just as it's been explained to you by your doctors and as you use the word, what do you mean by gut dysbiosis?
It means when you have all of the wrong kind of bacteria and none of the right kind of bacteria in your digestive system, in your colon, small intestine, you know, it means a yeast overgrowth. It means that undigested fats and proteins were passing through him. There was a test that would check for, literally, for undigested protein, undigested fats. Everything was just going through Jordan.
And what was the idea that by focusing on this dysbiosis, that these gastrointestinal symptoms, the diarrhea and projectile vomiting, I'm assuming this is all focused on dealing with those symptoms?
Yes.
Okay.
And in fact, we did get a handle on that. In February, I remember, after being just a few weeks on a gluten and casein-free diet, Jordan had a formed stool for the first time, you know, in at least a year. And that was very nice to see. So working with Dr. Green through that year, His digestion problems did improve, and you know the projectile vomiting went away. That was nice. The diarrhea definitely subsided to the point where we could even think about trying to potty train him. It's really hard to potty train a child with explosive diarrhea. Another treatment that John Green had us do was glutathione, B12 shots. And B12 shots are something that we continue to this day. I don't know why, but if I give Jordan a B12 shot every 3 days, he is just much better off. And if I forget, it's bad news. And when we started the B12 shots, shortly thereafter, Jordan finally was toilet trained and has remained that way to this day. He is completely toilet trained.
Now, you had mentioned all of these things going on in that first year of care with Dr. Green. This is 2001. So from January 2001 towards the end of 2001, this is the course of care that you were pursuing?
Yes.
You've mentioned that by doing this specifically, he got some of his eye contact came back.
Yes.
His GI, his gastrointestinal problems resolved.
Yes, and some words came back too.
Yeah, I wanted to. I was going to ask. Were there any other improvements that you saw in that first year of care with Dr. Green using the therapies you've described?
He was starting to bring back a couple of his words, more, mama. That gave us a lot of hope. One thing that they were doing in his early intervention was teaching him sign language, doing this for more, doing this for eat, things like that. And he was picking that up very quickly. And I think in a way that helped his communication. And one day I was in the kitchen just reading the paper, and he was eating, and I heard the word more come from him, and he wanted more. And I just remember my heart just leaping in my chest because he spoke to me unprompted. He could sometimes repeat back something if you said it to him. You know, he would say more if you said more after we changed his diet. But the fact that he had said it intentionally because he wanted more food was very encouraging. So, you know, with the GI stuff improving, the eye contact coming back, the humming starting to subside, although that did take a while, and the fact that he was starting to say words, you know, M words were the easiest thing for him to say, that was very encouraging, and that's why we've stuck to the diet, stuck to just being extremely healthy with the foods that he eats, and staying with John Green for so long. He definitely helped us get Jordan back.
Yeah, and talking about that brings us to the question I wanted to ask about how Jordan is doing today. And I'd like you to be as specific with the special masters as you can be, because, again, they have the records of these last 7 years, and we're not going to walk through those. But if you could just summarize how he is now in as much detail as you can.
Well, Jordan is now 10. He doesn't walk on his toes. He only flaps his hands if something excites him. He is still definitely, he's very affectionate, and he's very loving, and he gives kisses, and his receptive language is very high. We can say, Jordan, let's go outside, go get your shoes. He gets his shoes. Jordan, it's time for the bus. He goes to the front door, gets his backpack, gets on the bus. Jordan, don't do that. He stops. It's, in a way, a little bit frustrating that his receptive language is so high, and yet the words he can say, we're still working on that. He's, in the meantime, learned to communicate with sign language, and we also got him a communication board, which is a device that has panels. There are 8 panels on it, and you can interchange them up to 12 times. And there'll be pictures or words of things like juice or outside or, you know, a video. And he can press a button, and it'll say what he wants. So it's a way for him to talk to us. And he uses that very well. So we know that there's a lot going on in his brain. And we try to treat him as normally as possible, even though he can't talk to us very well. But he communicates through those means. He dresses himself. He can do a pretty complicated routine of things like, Jordan, it's time to take a bath. He goes in the bathroom, takes off his clothes, gets in the tub, rubs himself with a soapy washcloth, gets out, dries himself off, dries between his toes, goes upstairs with his dirty clothes, puts them in the laundry chute, goes to his room, gets his pajamas, puts them on. I mean, that's a huge thing for us. In the morning, he has a school routine of getting ready for the bus. He has a toothbrushing routine where he brushes, flosses, rinses, goes to the toilet, and then goes to bed. He does all of those things on his own.
What does he do for play?
For play, he very much likes to go outside and swing on his swing, climb on his jungle gym. My husband rigged a trapeze and a walnut tree that is, the rope is very long. We have a huge backyard area. We have a double deep lot. So he swings on this trapeze with amazing dexterity. We think he's going to join the circus someday. Loves doing that. Loves taking walks, going to the park, and likes watching Blue's Clues, and loves playing with his trains. He's a train boy. We've got trains all over the house, pushes them around on the track. We have some that are electric and some that you have to push around. And he loves watching Thomas the Tank Engine on television.
Now, when he plays with toys like the trains, is this the kind of play where he's using them as one would use trains, or does he do the stare at them? And
he doesn't do that anymore. He likes to hook them all up together and pull them around the track. We have some that are battery operated, and he likes to rearrange where the tunnels are. He loves to make bridges for the trains for some reason, just rearranging the track, different configurations, and either pushing them around or watching the automatic ones go around the train track. He also loves Hot Wheel cars and Hot Wheel track, setting it up. You know, we have about 50 feet of it that we can make it run the whole length of the house and do loop-de-loops. So he loves playing with cars and trains. You know, it's very encouraging for us because those are supposed to be typical little boy things that he likes to do. He doesn't really just take a car or a train and sort of study it with an intense focus or just spin the wheels. He plays with them appropriately. He also likes to play a game with his sister that they call Chase and Chinji, and that's a word my daughter came up with. She's interested in, my daughter's interested in martial arts, and because Jordan likes to press his chin into things and have a lot of pressure there, she calls it Chinji, and they chase each other. She can look at him with these eyes like, you better get ready, I'm going to chase you, and he takes off, and they run around, and they chase each other. And then when she finally catches him, he chins her. I don't know why that's so much fun for them, but I think my daughter's just grateful to have anything from him.
And so she can initiate this game just by looking at his face, and he looks at her face?
Yes, and so can I.
Would he even look at people's faces when he was 3 years old?
He was three?
Or at the what you would think of as the worst. Did he make eye contact and have that social back and forth?
No, that was a big problem for us, is that he wouldn't look at us. He would look through us, would look around us. I would sort of position myself to force him to look at me, and he would do anything but look at my face.
He seeks out that sort of contact now, is that fair?
He actually can read faces really well now. That's another big progress that we've made. For instance, I'll give you an example. If he's sneaking something that he's not supposed to have, and I peek around the corner and I look at him, he looks at me and he just sort of freezes. And if I go like this, like, it's okay, he'll do it. But if I go like that...
Make the mad face?
I make the mad face. He sort of, you know, is embarrassed or chuckles and then moves away from the object. And I actually try to do that with him as much as possible, because one thing that I read about autism is that they can't read people's faces. And I know now that for Jordan that's not true. He can definitely read your face, read your emotions, and he can read your tone of voice. And if one thing that we have to do in our house is when we speak to each other, we have to make sure that the tones don't come out as being harsh or scolding. And if you talk in a pleasant voice, a happy voice, he reacts to that. But if I'm scolding my daughter, for instance, you know, Maya, stop doing that, Jordan goes, like he's in trouble or something. He can definitely read people's emotions. And that's a big progress for us. Because for a while, my daughter could hurt herself and fall and cry and everybody would be upset and he would just laugh. But now he has this sort of reciprocal emotion. That's, you know, it's a nice human thing to have.
And I don't know if you can answer this or not, but If you think of Jordan and how he was at the point where you believe he was at his worst in terms of his symptoms and where he is now, what's the single biggest area that you think he's improved in? And again, not medically, but just what's the most significant to you as a parent? And if there's not just one, if there are more, that's fine too.
For me as a parent, the biggest thing is that he shows love. He shows affection. He cares about what I think. When I'm gone and I come home, he's happy to see me. He doesn't just walk around as if I hadn't even entered the room. He cares about what I think of him. If he's done something bad, he is now showing signs of being ashamed or being sorry. He does things like when I tuck him in at night, he in his sign language says, "I love you." And when he touches me here and he draws his finger down like this and he stops at my heart. And he tells me he loves me. And I know he knows what it means. That for me is the biggest thing. If he ends up never talking, that's okay. I know that he's a human being.
Nothing further.
Thank you very much, Ms. King. Ms. Bonner, do you have any questions?
Yes.
Please go ahead, Ms. Esposito.
Good morning, Mrs. King. My name is Catherine Esposito. I represent the government. I'd like to echo the sentiments of the special master this morning and my colleagues earlier this week. We have certainly seen countless hours of video from your family, and we recognize the journey that you have been on with Jordan's care in the last decade. It's very clear to all of us that you love him very much, and we definitely acknowledge that. I'd like to go back to when you first had concerns about Jordan's development and his behavior. When was the first time that you thought that there was something that was abnormal about Jordan's development?
Well, like I said, when we saw him toe walking and flapping, we thought those were just cute mannerisms.
When did that emerge?
About 18, 19 months.
And that was the very first thing that...
Well, retrospectively, yes.
Okay. And there were other people in your family who share those concerns?
Nobody lives in Portland that's related to us, so I would have to say no.
Okay. And the first time that you shared your concerns about Jordan's development with Dr. Roberts, his pediatrician, that was at the 2-year visit?
Yes.
From what you can recall, when did Jordan first start speaking? When exactly did he say "mama" his first word?
He had a lot of babble that every once in a while would accidentally come out as maybe a word, but I would have to say he was close to his first birthday before he had a mama or a bye.
And the records show that he had about 5 words at the beginning.
What do you mean by beginning?
When he first started speaking. He said, I think some of the words were ball, juice, shoes.
Shoes, yeah.
Can you recall any other words aside from that that he spoke?
Well, he did have the word hat because he liked to wear hat. He said... mailbox, daddy came later. I really don't have an exact chronology of when each word came to him. I can just remember the words that I remember him speaking. Bye, ball, tickety for the character on Blue's Clues, hot.
I'd like to direct your attention to when Jordan was seen by Dr. Green. You first found out about Dr. Green from the internet, is that right?
From other parents who had seen him. There was some sort of chat room that we were told he was the best guy in town.
The records have described Jordan as having some unusual abilities with music, drawing, his sense of direction, problem solving, and Dr. Green has termed that as possibly savant. He used that term in the records. Can you go through some of Jordan's unusual abilities, such as the sense of direction? Can you describe that?
Well, that is something that Jordan had more remarkably after his regression, being able to, if we went somewhere in a big building that you had to go up to a certain floor and get off a hallway and turn a certain way and then go in a certain door, if we went there once, if we were to return to that place, I would just follow Jordan because he knew the way to get to that place.
What about his musical abilities? He would look at you when you sang, is that correct?
Oh, he loved singing. He loved to hear singing. He liked music, so does my daughter. We have a piano, a marimba, a bass, kazoos, an electronic keyboard. We have all sorts of musical instruments just lying around the house that he liked to explore and play, bang on, actually.
What about his problem-solving skills? There's a note in the records about Jordan being able to obtain an item that he wanted on a high shelf.
Well, he would push a chair over and then crawl up on the chair to get to something that was too high for him to reach.
Was that something he did often?
Once he was physically able to, yes.
And you mentioned his drawing with a Magna Doodle. Did he also write his name at one point?
He did, and that was after his regression that he stunned us because I had written a J on the... Well, before that, I had always tried to... We were sad because he no longer was interested in drawing at all. And
What point was he no longer interested in the drawing?
I would say by the end of 99, early 2000, he just wasn't playing with his Magna Doodle anymore, and that was one of his favorite toys. And something that I would do I would draw his name for him. I would try to get him to watch me just draw his name very carefully, Jordan, and then I would erase it. And maybe I would do it again. And he'd usually walk away. And one day we were in the kitchen preparing food, and I had written just the J on the Magna Doodle and walked away. And at some point my husband looked down and saw J-O-R-A-N. He forgot the D. And he said, "Did you do that?" And I said, "No." And we actually took a picture of that because it was very remarkable to us that he had done that. But again, that I believe that was done after he was autistic.
Was Jordan sick as a child?
Not particularly. He had occasional episodes with a cold. He did have that one visit to the emergency room for his fever and vomiting, but I don't really recall him being a sick child, just the normal occasional diaper rash. I think he had an episode with what they thought was croup that resolved itself quickly. So I felt like he was just, having the normal childhood illnesses.
There's a note in the records that Dr. Green thought Jordan had a chronic measles infection of the gut. Was that your thought at the time as well?
No, it wasn't my thought. I think Dr. Green might have suspected that because of this chronic diarrhea and bowel inflammation and everything related to his digestive problem. I don't even recall if we did any testing on for that or not.
When did you come to think that Jordan's autism was caused by thimerosal-containing vaccines?
When we ran provoked tests on him and the mercury level was in the 96th percentile and we couldn't find a source of mercury from any other source. Around our house, through me, that's when I really decided that that's where the problem came from.
We're going to put on the screen a list of medications and supplements that Jordan was on. I'm going to ask you a couple questions about them. This is Jordan King Exhibit 7 at page 17 and 18. Let's look at number 7 on the list, Enzyme Aid. Do you know what that was for?
That is for, it's a digestive enzyme that helps break down casein and gluten. And the reason we took that is because Dr. Green said that even when you're trying very hard to be on a gluten and casein-free diet, that those ingredients are so pervasive in things that you would least expect. And sometimes facilities that process wheat also will process your rice cereal, and there might, you know, you basically just can't be positively 100% sure that you're completely eliminating gluten and casein, and that was what, that was just sort of a backup for that in case he accidentally got some gluten or dairy.
What about number 28, the EntroCap? Do you know what that was for?
I think that that was to kill off the bad bacteria that he was not supposed to have in his system.
And in addition to the medications listed on this exhibit, Jordan was also on intravenous immunoglobulin therapy, is that correct? The IVIG therapy?
I think we tried that.
Who recommended that you do that?
Dr. Green.
And did Dr. Green administer that treatment?
Yes.
He did? And that was a couple of times?
One or two, I don't remember.
And you mentioned he was chelated as well, correct?
He's still chelating.
He's chelated today, okay. Jordan was also on Eskimo oil at one point?
Yes.
What is that for?
Do you know? That's a fish oil.
Okay. And Jordan was also on Valtrex, is
yes.
that correct?
Yes.
Do you know what that's for?
That was an antiviral.
And he's also been on secretin?
Yes.
And what is that for, do you know?
That's something that your pancreas make that help with digestion. And just around the time that Jordan got his diagnosis and we started seeing specialists and Dr. Green, there was a lot of information out there about secretin helping some children because a young autistic boy who was brought in for some digestive tests was given secretin just as a kind of a to help with the test. It wasn't meant to help with his behavior. And the boy started talking and improving. And for that child, it ended up being a really good thing. So there was a lot of information that perhaps secretin would help children, and we did try it, and it did seem to improve his eye contact and his digestive problems. But and we actually took part in a secretin study at OHSU, where a child was given 6 doses of secretin or a placebo, and then you were supposed to report on your findings. Unfortunately, Jordan got the placebo. And after the study was over, they wouldn't tell us for a long time whether he had gotten the secretin or the placebo, and we didn't want to continue with secretin until we knew whether it was going to really help him, because that's a hard thing to do because it was intravenous.
There's also a mention in the records about possibly trying Jordan on Actos. Do you know if Jordan ever took that?
I don't recall that he took that. I don't even remember what that was for.
Would you keep track of when Jordan would go on and off a supplement?
Oh, yeah. We had a chart that we would pin inside the cabinet door where the supplements were because it was fairly complicated. Some things were supposed to be given on an empty stomach, and some were supposed to be given with food. Some were supposed to be done just at nighttime before he went to bed. So we had charts that would help us manage that.
Does Jordan eat any fish?
Does he now?
Yes.
He does. He eats, what's it called? He likes halibut, I think. But we do limit the fish. He will eat it.
So he eats it today?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you. I have nothing further.
Any redirect, Mr. Power?
No redirect, Special Masters.
Most of the questions that I had for you, Ms. King, have been answered. I'm going to ask you one question. I think I know the answer to this, but just to make a record of it. At one point, you mentioned that someone was a Dan doctor. Can you tell us what that means?
Defeat Autism Now.
That's an organization.
Yes.
And they have doctors who are members of that organization.
Right. And as I understand it, in order to be a Dan doctor, you have to go through a lot of training and have a certain protocol for dealing with autism through dietary intervention and dealing with the sort of the physical issues as well as the mental issues.
Well, that's all that I had. Anything further?
Nothing to follow up from those questions.
Well, Ms. King, thank you very much for your testimony. That was certainly moving testimony, and it's certainly obvious that Jordan is very much loved and well taken care of by his family. So we thank you again for being with us today.
Thank you.
Excuse me. Council, why don't we take our mid-morning break at this point? So I've got 10:28. We'll reconvene about 10:45.
I was hoping you weren't going to say 10:43.
All right.